The content you are about to hear represents the personal experiences and viewpoints of cardiac patients that are happy to share their stories. We are not medical professionals, and the information provided should not be construed as professional medical advice. If you are experiencing any medical symptoms, we strongly recommend that you seek the guidance from a qualified medical professional or a cardiac specialist. Your health and well-being are of utmost importance, and nothing in this podcast should replace personal professional medical advice. Remember, everyone's situation is unique, and seeking professional help is crucial for accurate diagnosis and treatment. Thank you for joining us. Next up is episode one, part three. This will be the last part of episode one, at least for the time being. Today we'll hear from Ed, who will give a very calm account of his cardiac incident. And if you're a golfer, you may want to switch off now.
So before I talk about the cardiac incident, I think it's only fair that I tell everybody a little bit about what happened to me before that, because I think it's relevant in sort of many ways, and you can make up your own mind. But so my cardiac incident happened in December of 2021. So just over 2 years ago. But before I tell you about that, I just want to tell you that in March of 2020, exactly the same week as the original lockdown for the pandemic, I was diagnosed with prostate cancer, which obviously rocks your world, turns your world upside down. I had quite significant prostate cancer. They weren't entirely sure whether it was contained within the prostate or not. So it hadn't been caught particularly early. If you recall, hospitals and the NHS were completely sort of messed up by the pandemic. So I had all sorts of tests, and cut a long story short, it culminated in me deciding that I would opt for the surgery to have my prostate removed. So that was done in, I think it was either June or July of 2020. It's quite a significant sort of surgery, quite major surgery. But it
Very.
went all that all went well. But it takes a bit of getting over, so you've got sort of weeks and probably more like months of sort of recovering from that. And I recovered pretty well from that and felt fine. And incidentally, my reaction to being diagnosed with cancer was that I got all I wanted to do was eat healthily and lose weight and get as fit as I possibly could, which I was doing to the best of my ability. Unfortunately, it didn't get rid of all the cancer. The cancer was still there. So the following year, in I think it was February of 2021, I had a month's worth of radiotherapy to try and, as they call it, sort of like hoover up any bits of cancer that are possibly left. So I had that, still doing my best to keep as fit as I possibly could. I didn't eat any rubbish. I was just eating healthily, and I felt fine actually, and I'm just telling you all this because it sort of sets the scene, that when that radiotherapy was over, I felt fine. Life got back to normal. I actually felt better than I'd felt before because I'd lost weight and all of that stuff. So I was getting on with my life as best I could, and all was good. So we then move on to the end of 2021. Got to December, and I'm in a little golf society with a group of friends that I used to play rugby with back in the day. And it was our Christmas event. We have a little Christmas society event which takes place on Wimbledon Common, and which is a public course. nothing special, but it's a nice little course. And it was the 10th of December, and it was a lovely sunny day. It was cold, but it was a lovely sunny day. Met up there in the morning. We had a bit of breakfast. I felt fantastic, really good. Looking forward to the golf. Started playing, and I think I'd played about 9 or 10 holes. I can't remember exactly how many. Teed off on this one particular hole, hit a really nice drive straight down the middle. Really good. You know, everything was happy days, all going well. I walked up to my ball to play a shot that I'd played loads of times before. I knew what shot it was. It was an 8 iron. I was just thinking, yeah, that's an 8 iron. I know what I'm doing here. And I just felt a little bit dizzy. Just for a second or so, I felt a bit dizzy. And I just had time to think, oh, that doesn't feel right. And then I was gone. I had a cardiac arrest. Completely out of the blue. I had no warning, no symptoms, nothing. Felt a bit dizzy. And I was dead before I hit the ground. Now, if any of you know anything about cardiac arrest, not many people survive what they call out-of-hospital cardiac arrests. It's about one in, less than one in 10, maybe about one in 15 people survive. And to survive, you need certain things to happen, and you need them to happen pretty quickly. And the first thing that needs to happen is somebody needs to recognize what has happened. And I just happened on that day to be playing with my friend Jeff, who had some experience of heart problems. His mother had had heart problems. His mother had had a cardiac arrest. And he knew exactly what was happening straight away. So, you know, my other friends were like, oh, Eddie's fainted, or, you know, let's do this, let's do that. And Jeff said, no, that's a cardiac arrest. And he turned me over onto my back and he started doing CPR straight away. That's the first thing that's got to happen. While that was happening, another friend of mine who walked his dog on Wimbledon Common, he was playing with us, he had the number of the Wimbledon Common Rangers, and their accommodation by the windmill, if anybody knows it, was only about 600-800 yards away. And he rang them and they answered the phone because they were there. He told them what was happening. They got their defibrillator off the wall, jumped in their buggy and whizzed over to me. And I believe, I'm not entirely sure, but that took sort of 5 minutes and they were with me. So all these things are starting to stack up. And we were the last group in our society, the four of us that were playing, we were the last ones. Behind us was a single golfer. And you don't often get guys playing on their own, you know, but this guy was playing on his own, a single, and he saw what was happening. And he was a paramedic.
Jeepers.
So he made his way across the course up the fairway to us and knew what to do. Took over the CPR, told everybody what to do. He sort of got the defibrillator, sorted out the defibrillator, put it on me, and I believe, and again, this is all a bit blurry and I need to keep talking to my friends about it, but I was very lucky. I had one shot and it started my heart again, because wow. I was in what's called a shockable rhythm. Not all abnormal rhythms are shockable. I was in ventricular fibrillation, VF, which is the most common abnormal rhythm, and it's a shockable one. And the defibrillator shocked me back. And again, while all this was happening, my friends had rung 999, obviously, and more than one, can't remember how many, but ambulances and police and everything started descending on on the common. And I don't remember. I mean, you guys were talking similarly. I don't remember much of it. I remember coming round, and I remember my friend Keith just holding my hand and telling me what had happened. He said, "You've had a heart attack. You're going to be okay." And I remember my reaction to Keith was, I said, "Oh, fucking hell. Have I?" I was really like, "Oh, no, I had a heart attack." I have vague memories of the ambulance crew being over me when I was on the floor. So I guess they give you loads of sort of medication that half knocks you out, and I was put in the back of the ambulance, and I was blue lighted to St. George's. I remember a little bit of that journey, but not all of it. I remember, as you guys have said, I was whizzed straight into the cath lab, and I have vague memories of that. I remember talking to one of the doctors, and I think he was talking to me to see if I had any. See what my cognitive state was like, whether I'd been affected by the downtime and all of that. And I think I remember having a reasonable conversation with him. But I don't remember what happened after that. But I was whizzed into the cath lab, and I don't remember the cath lab at all. Apparently, I was in there for, I think it's a good hour. Hour and a half, is it, or something ridiculous? I don't know, but
The
my
time whizzes by.
well, I was out of it. I wasn't like you guys. I don't remember looking at any screens or seeing anything or anything at all. But apparently, the main artery down the front of my heart was 100% blocked. And
Left anterior,
the LAD, which I believe. Ha ha ha, they call the widow maker. Says it all really. But so what they think happened with me, they told me afterwards, was sometimes a bit of the plaque breaks off and sort of like just completely blocks that artery. And it also causes a little bleed, which has to then coagulate, and suddenly you go from partially blocked to 100% blocked. And that, I guess, is what happened to me when I was walking up to that golf ball, that you're suddenly blocked and your heart just doesn't know how to deal with that, and it just goes into this weird electrical rhythm because it can't cope. So you have a cardiac arrest as opposed to a heart attack, which you guys had. So anyway, cath lab, they cleared that blockage. They took that blockage out. However, they do it with a little vacuum cleaner or something. They suck it out, don't they? And I had two stents put in. And again, don't remember much else. I remember waking up back in the cardiac ward, and my wife and my daughter were there. But I remember sort of like drifting in and out of consciousness. And then I remember them sort of saying, "He's got to go to intensive care." So I was taken to intensive care, and I think I was there for about 2.5 days in intensive care in a room on my own, just constantly being looked after and monitored and whatever they do. And then they suddenly decide, "Oh, actually, he seems okay now." And I was put back into the cardiac ward. And I was there for a few days. I had all sorts of tests. You have echocardiograms and MRIs and all sorts of things. And the doctors eventually came to me and said, "Actually, we think you would benefit from having an implanted cardiac defibrillator, which is a bit like a pacemaker, put under the skin of the chest with a cable that goes into your heart." And it's really, for me, it's sort of like belt and braces, in the event of me having another cardiac arrest. it immediately kicks in. It recognizes it within a second or two and gives you that shock that you need to start your heart again. I mean, hopefully I won't ever need it, but we don't know. But I've got it. Thank you,
Where
Fred.
do
I can see you with your fingers crossed,
you...
Gordon.
Yeah. Well, it gives you comfort as well because I've got an ICD too, and the fact that it's there actually is almost like a fail-safe. It's sort of it gives you that little bit of security that you wouldn't otherwise have.
It does, and I think that's especially relevant, especially it was for my wife. You know, when they told me I needed it, my first reaction was, no, oh, you know, it's another surgery, it's another thing I didn't really want. But I could tell my wife was like, oh, she was so relieved because there's less chance now that I'm suddenly going to drop dead on her because she knows that she doesn't have to do anything because it's there, you know. So from her point of view, it's a huge comfort, and you know, really that's what matters. So yeah, I don't know where to stop this story really, but other than being incredibly lucky that all of those things happened to me and I survived, I mean, the other thing to say, I suppose, is that people that survive out of hospital cardiac arrests, those that do survive often survive, but with some sort of detrimental effects, whether it's to the heart
Absolutely.
or whether it's to the brain. But I did suffer some damage to my heart muscle, but not a lot. And well, you guys might tell me differently, but I don't think I suffered any sort of cognitive sort of effects either. So I was incredibly lucky. Unbelievably lucky, really. And I do get sort of quite emotional when I think about that side of it, you know, that, you know, it just sort of wasn't my day to die sort of thing, you know.
Ed, a question if I may. Did you ever find out how long was you out for?
It's a really good question, Fred. And it took me a long time of talking to my friends and piecing together what happened, because it's really important to me that I know. And I really should write it down in great detail, which I haven't done. But my friends said that everything happened and I was back conscious within, I remember one of my friends, John, saying it was about 7 minutes, which is just incredible, because I think they say after 10 minutes, you're in serious danger of sort of suffering damage. So to get back and be have the heart circulating again on its own, which they call spontaneous
Did
circulation,
you
something.
throw the eight iron away?
My question was, have you gone back to play
I
there?
would have got
Have
rid
you
of that.
gone
I
back
would
to
have got
play
rid
there,
of
Ed?
it.
I'll tell you an even funnier story, okay? It's not a great society that I'm in, and there's not many of us left now. We used to be quite big, but now there's only about sort of a dozen or 15 of us regulars that play. On that day, obviously, I suppose after this happened, the guys just gave up and walked in and said, "Hey, we'll finish for the day," sort of thing. But they did top the scores up, and I won.
No, Ed.
You're a winner in many ways,
So I always say to this day to my mates, I said, what a crappy society that we are, that you can die halfway round and still win. But
Mean,
no.
it's a good question about are you comfortable playing golf? Again, are you happy to go out on a course? I mean, you've got the IUD on and stuff, but is it, do you have you ventured back out or?
Yeah, I have. I absolutely have. And I mean, you guys touched on it about how you feel afterwards, and immediately afterwards, i.e., within the sort of days and weeks and even months afterwards, you feel incredibly fragile. And
Yes, we are physically
vulnerable. Yeah.
You really lack confidence in everything you do.
Yeah.
Even
Yeah.
I can remember when I got home, even sort of like getting out of an armchair or sort of bending down to pick something up off the floor or walking up a flight of stairs, you know, you think, oh my God, can I do this? Is something
Yeah.
horrible going to happen? But I guess with a bit of time that goes, and I feel okay now. It's not something I give an awful lot of thought to on a day-to-day basis. You know, I've tried, like you guys, you know, I do the cardiac rehab, and I've also taken up a sport. I call it a sport. I play pickleball. I
Yeah, it's
play it. I
popular.
play it
Yeah.
like 2 or 3 times a week, and it can be quite a tough game, you know. And
Yeah.
I play that, and I don't really think about it, to be honest, you know. So I just try and get on with it, and
That's the way. That's the way. Just you don't have to think about it. You just got to do it. Yeah.
I mean, it certainly
I'll get
took
on with it.
many months to sort of get back to that sort of position, but. Yeah, I'm 2 years on. I'm okay. You know, I'm
Ed, I
okay.
wanted to ask you a question about you mentioned about the cognitive function and stuff, and I mean we've known you for a couple of years, but obviously we haven't known you as long as your wife. Has your wife or your daughter noticed any difference in your cognitive function or any other functions that, I mean, you've been through a lot. You've had the obviously the prostate cancer, the prostate removed and stuff, and then this incident, which, to be quite honest, it was quite harrowing. Got some little angel on your shoulder for all of those things to align, you know. So, but have they noticed anything since the cardiac?
I don't think so. I mean, I think probably more than the cardiac event, probably the cancer
Yeah.
diagnosis and treatment was a tougher journey.
Yeah.
And you know, you're on an awful lot of medication for various aspects of that, and that really does affect you, sort of physically and emotionally. So they probably noticed the difference with that. excuse me. With the, I don't know. I think I'm probably a sort of, I don't know, maybe a more gentle person, because you just
Really?
sort of, well,
Okay.
I think you just, maybe it's just a getting old thing as well, but you just,
Mellowed you.
yeah, you know, really, what do things matter? You know, when we're talking about potential illness and death, and
Right.
hey, you know, so I think
My
you
wife
rise.
said that. My wife said I've mellowed. My son has
Really?
mellowed.
So, but one of the things you mentioned previously, Ed, when we were talking outside of this podcast, was anger, and I think it's something we all said in the pub that we all have it to a degree. And I can remember talking to a guy went that was in for his second bypass operation when I was in hospital, Scottish guy and stuff. But he was talking about the fits of rage he was getting, you know, as a cardiac patient. And I couldn't quite understand that. But then I can remember talking to my wife about it. She said, "Yeah, you still have fits of rage and frustration." I think it was as much as anything else. And it's coming to terms with, you know, you're never going to be the same. You can't always do the things that you were doing before, and you know there are going to be limitations on your life, right? So, and I wasn't sure if you still have those sort of bouts of anger, if you like, or
No, I don't. Not in any
yeah,
way. I mean, what we
okay.
talked about before was I've just all my life I've been one of those sort of quite sort of aggressive and angry people, I suppose, you know. And when I was much younger, it, I wouldn't call it a problem, but you know, it was always sort of there. But no, as I've got older, whether it's anything to do with what I've been through or whether it's just part of getting old, I mean, that has also sort of mellowed. But I have wondered over the years whether that sort of inherent sort of frustration that is in some of us, you know, we talk about stress and things being a killer for, you know, whether that was a contributory factor. I don't know, you know, possibly it was. But no, I don't feel like that now, and I don't feel angry or bitter or anything about what's happened to me in the last few years, whether it's the cancer or the, I don't really think like
Yeah,
that. So
that's good.
just a couple of things. I don't know how much time we've got, but
Carry
as much
on.
as you want.
when I said I had no symptoms, no warning at all about this, I've been really thinking about that, and I didn't. It came completely out of the blue, my cardiac arrest. But I've looked back, and there were two times when I think actually I did have a little bit of a warning. For example, one of them, some months before, my wife and I went on holiday to Cornwall, and we were in a village, and we did this sort of walk up the side of the cliff to this viewing point. And I remember when we got to the top of that, just thinking, God, that was a little bit harder than it used to be. I'm feeling a little bit out of breath, And I look back on that now and think, oh, I wonder if I should have realized something was a bit odd, But they were the only sort of warning that I had, really, but didn't think any more of it. It was gone within a few minutes, and just move on. But so maybe there are warning signs that we just don't see or we ignore. But
Okay, thanks, Ed. So that concludes episode one, part three. Next up, we have episode two, which we've decided to call The Road to Rehab, where we will talk about the period between when we received our treatment and when we entered the cardiac rehab program at Epsom Hospital. So until next time, look after yourselves and stay safe.